And welcome to the Tater Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. We're going to talk to Eve Engler today about Venezuela and the strange position of the Canadian government. And we will also be talking to Norman Otis Richmond. It's Black History Month. We're going to talk about Austin Clark and Gene Daniels, some of the pioneers in the struggle against racism and the apartheid system in South Africa. And latter part of the show, we will be talking to Zafar Bengash about Kashmir. There's been an event held this past weekend in which, solidarity with Kashmir. We're going to go into the details of what that issue is all about. And Phil Conlon is here. How are you doing, Phil?
Yes, good afternoon.
I want to make sure I say right off the bat that there's going to be a visit to Canada by Dan Kovalik. He's the author of The Plot to Control the World, Guess Who? And Dan Kovalik will be speaking Sunday, February 17, 2 p.m. at the Steelworkers Hall. That's Sunday, February 17, 2 p.m., Steelworkers Hall. And Monday, February 18, in Hamilton at New Vision United Church at 7 p.m. And again, that's Dan Kovalik, quite well known for his commentary and his books. And this book is about U.S. and how it exercises its power, The Plot to Control the World. And Dan will be talking, of course, a lot about Venezuela on this visit. And I believe we are joined now by Eve Engler. Are you there, Eve?
How's it going, Phil?
Good, and I'm glad to be talking to you. You have written an article I was very impressed with. It's titled Canada's Goal of Overthrowing Venezuela's Government is Decades Old. I found this at ricochet.media. Eve, as you point out in the opening paragraphs, and we're being told by the Canadian government and various people who used to work for them that the crisis that led them to this strange decision about recognizing this obscure man named Guaido was that in 2017 they had some sort of constitutional arrangement which Canada disapproved of. You went to work on that, and my goodness, it goes way back. What's going on with this story? What is Canada's historic position towards, I guess, the Hugo Chavez phenomenon, which goes way back?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the first thing is this is a sort of more sophisticated pro-government line, which is being pushed a lot by the Ben Roswell, who was the former Canadian ambassador in Caracas, and he's trying to say that it begins with the sort of unconstitutional moves that the Maduro government made, particularly with setting up the Constitutional Assembly in the summer of 2017. Well, we know that in April of 2002, when the military overthrew Hugo Chavez, that Canada never criticized the coup, or at least didn't criticize the coup until Chavez was put back in place. Most countries in the hemisphere criticized the coup. The year before, at the Summit of the Americas in Quebec City, the Chrétien government made a big thing about the democracy clause in the Organization of American States Charter. And then when there was a clear example of electoral democracy being overthrown a year later, they stayed silent until Chavez was put back because of a popular protest and elements of the military not going along with the coup, and other countries in the region criticizing the policy. And we know that basically since that time, Canada has to varying degrees supported opposition groups in Venezuela, criticized the Venezuelan government way out of proportion with anything that government had done, and way out of proportion with all kinds of other governments in the region that we didn't criticize or we allied with. So I just go through that in that piece. You know, basically, it's been a policy of either low level, and now we're seeing the not so low level, very aggressive in your face efforts to weaken, undermine, overthrow the political movement that Chavez initiated, and the reasons for those efforts to overthrow that political movement is because, a mix of the fact that alignment with U.S. empire in the region, and there's some major Canadian corporate interests that were not happy with the further nationalization of oil. Petro-Canada back in 2007, Canadian mining companies, gold companies, Crystal X, gold reserves that had $1 billion-plus decade-long legal battle with the Venezuelan government because of their efforts to gain greater control over the gold in the country. So a mix of Canada being tied into U.S. empire and Canadian corporate interests that are hostile to the Venezuelan government. Now we just see, this regime change effort in a absolutely aggressive, in-your-face Canada openly boasting that we're bringing countries from around the world to Ottawa to, as the so-called Lima groups, the Trinique from a week ago in Ottawa meeting said, we're calling on the Venezuelan military to get rid of the elected government. I mean, you can't get more kind of in your face.
Coupled with that bizarre thing about, we don't want to see any violence. We don't want to see we don't want any aggression. But you think you can tell the army of another country to rise up against the elected president?
No, but of course. And beyond that, I mean, the Trump administration has been threatening invasion of Venezuela now for basically 2 years. Repeated threats, both public that Donald Trump himself has made, and a number of media reports about talking to Colombian officials about, hey, why can't we just invade? We know that when the Lima Group, about 6 months ago now, I guess it is, condemned the head of the organization, American States, sort of musing about a possible invasion, Canada was one of three countries, Guyana and Colombia, that refused to condemn this talk, this open talk about a foreign invasion of Venezuela. Canada's defense minister 10 days ago now said it was premature to talk about a foreign military invasion. Now, subsequently, now they have started to sort of put more of a sort of firm line and, no, we're not talking about invasion, but they're doing everything they can to lead us towards a situation of invasion, including this announcement of $53 million in Canadian humanitarian aid, which is all setting up, putting it on, as we're seeing in the press last 48 hours, send the humanitarian aid to the border, try to create a division within the Venezuelan military. You have the Juan Guaido, the self-declared president, referring to it being genocidal that we're not letting this aid into that Maduro's not letting this aid into Venezuela. I mean, this is just clearly setting up the conditions to legitimate, justify.
The magic word is humanitarian intervention, right?
Exactly.
It's a good deed. And the history of colonialism is endless good deeds for 300 years of misery. We're speaking to Eve Engler, and who's got a brilliant article in the ricochet.media is where I found it. Eve, I wonder about just – you notice that CARICOM doesn't count for 2 cents with the Canadian government, and Mexico doesn't count for 2 cents? CARICOM is 14 countries, and they are up on their hind legs angry with the OAS-designated leader – who they say is speaking out of turn. He has no authority to be talking the way he does. But also, why Canada talks about this, Freeland does, and doesn't mention Mexico and CARICOM.
I mean, that was the reason for the creation of the Lima Group. The reason for the creation of the Lima Group, of groups that are opposed to the Maduro government, is that they couldn't get the censure of Venezuela via the Organization of American States. An organization, American States, that's led by an individual who's wildly hostile to Maduro.
He's been expelled, I understand, by his own party in Uruguay for his conduct.
Yes, for being just over the top. I mean, like I said, he was musing about a possible invasion. So that's the reason for the creation of Lima Group. you know, you never hear that mentioned in the media, that you know, it's because it was the minority position within the Organization of American States, and that's why they've had to create this other group. They tried to do it via the OAS. Mm-hmm. Now, it's not correct to say they don't care about the position of the CARICOM, because we know that the Canadian government has been lobbying aggressively against a bunch of these Caribbean communities, Caribbean countries where Canada has actually quite a bit of influence, to have them join the campaign against Venezuela. So
yeah, it's had the opposite effect, right? I mean, CARICOM is getting stronger. They're like Bolivia.
They haven't succeeded, but they got Haiti to just reverse their position at the start of last month, and to go along with the policy. And actually, what you're seeing is very interesting. This, we'll see where this plays out. There's massive protests in Haiti. That these go back to the corruption scandals around the Petrocaribe, billions of dollars that the Martelly regime that Canada backed that stole. But what has further sort of enraged protesters in Haiti, which look like they're about to topple the government, is the fact that they've switched this position to being this anti-Venezuela position, and it's viewed as an incredible sellout to Washington and to Ottawa. Mm-hmm. So this is, you know, this is a very live political issue. I mean, you had the presidents of Mexico basically criticizing this politicized aid. And of course, you'll never hear that mentioned in the Canadian media.
Not at all. He may as well not exist. When I pick up the paper, I don't see his name. I don't see Mexico mentioned. He's the most popular guy in the hemisphere in terms of actual demonstrated support of the people.
And a country of 130 million people, a NAFTA member, you know, and this, and I think it's also kind of, it's interesting to contrast Canadian foreign policy to Mexico foreign policy. A lot of people say that we have to go along with the U.S. because of NAFTA, but then you see a situation in Mexico where they don't have to go along, and there's a sense of independence, and I think that leads towards a sort of an understanding of how the Canadian capitalist class is not just being forced into this. This is Canadian capitalist class are, you know, very much believers in you know, imperialism and ousting governments that don't follow the orders and whatnot.
Yeah, they are actually, the reason they were not in OAS Canada all these years is because they are so subservient and known to be that, you know, Latin states actually were not comfortable with them. Now they join OAS and they become destructive almost overnight with this stuff of breaking up. I mean, to me, it looks like a faction trying to destroy the OAS. And by the way, I should mention the United Nations. Does it count for nothing? The United Nations does not recognize Guaido. They say the president of Venezuela is Maduro.
Yeah, and they've criticized this politicized aid. You know, the Red Cross, the other forces that are saying, no, hey, this is, you know, we're fine with receiving aid, but this is not what's going on here. This is an effort at destabilization. This is the politicized process, and all that left out of the. Of the discussion. Alongside, I think it's also important for listeners to note, this isn't the first time Canada has supported a coup against a social democratic-minded elected government in the hemisphere. We obviously have 2009 in Honduras with Zelaya. We have the most extreme form, probably 2004 in Haiti. But if you go back even historically, you look at Dominican Republic in 65, you look at Arbenz in Guatemala, you look at even what happened in Dilma Rousseff in Brazil, parliamentary coups, sort of soft coups. Canada has consistently, in Chile 73, in a slightly greater extent than some of the other ones, basically has supported the overthrow of these elected governments. It's now often, you know, years later, in the case of Chile, for instance, it's now framed as Canada having been against Pinochet, but that's absolutely not based in fact. Within a week, the Trudeau government recognized Pinochet. The Trudeau government had done a whole series of things to undermine Salvador Allende. There's obviously the famous cable from the Canadian ambassador referring to the riffraff of the Latin American left that were being killed in the stadium by Pinochet's henchmen in the days after the coup. So this, you know, there is a historical trajectory that we, you know, we should be obviously appalled by what they're doing right now. But this is not totally out of out of the pattern of Canadian foreign policy behavior.
Yeah. This is Eve Engler, and the article's Canada's goal of overthrowing Venezuela's government is decades old, ricochet.media. And Eve, as you've in all your books demonstrated how Canada's been sort of the nasty little partner of the British and the Americans. And you, of course, have been breaking through with your books, lectures, writing, exposing the fact that the Canadian media plays ball always, loyally. And I wonder your reaction to the fact that the Chrystia Freeland's little press show with the wonderful people from Paraguay and Honduras and Brazil, they excluded Telesur because they said, oh, they might produce misinformation.
I mean, no comment about that.
I mean, I think maybe Rick Salutin in a column mentioned it. But for crying out loud, what happened to the Canadian media? And some of these, they excluded people who have press credentials in Ottawa.
Yeah, I mean, they excluded Telesur, they excluded RT, Sputnik. I think there was one or two others that they excluded. They claimed, Chrystia Freeland, one interview I saw, claimed that it was, state-sponsored media that they were, CBC was there, of course. I don't know, BBC may have been there. I think this is explained in large part because they know just the flimsiness of their claims. I mean, they make this claim about this is all being done because of Article 233 of the Venezuelan Constitution. It says that Juan Guaido should be president as interim president as head of the National Assembly. There's a power vacuum. All this. These are ridiculous claims that anyone could just take a quick look at the Constitution.
Their real fear was that they might have information, not misinformation.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah, so they don't want to have Telesur reporters that actually know some of this stuff. Telesur
speaks Spanish, stuff like that.
They speak Spanish, and they've reported on how most of the world doesn't recognize Guaido, and they have the CARICOM and the OAS meetings and all that stuff. And so they just simply said no. Fortunately, there were protesters that got in there and had a nice banner and chanted hands off Venezuela at the start of the press conference. And I think that actually had an effect on the tone a bit of the press conference. But this is the government is all in, and the media is mostly all in. I had this interview right after the Lima Group meeting on CTV with Don Martin, where Don Martin starts off with Chrystia Freeland, and he just says, I think the wording is, so are we after today's meeting, or are we one step closer to kicking Maduro out of office? And Chrystia Freeland has to sort of like try to throw a little bit of sort of diplomatic kind of sounding stuff. This is like, come on.
To safely make that turn, yes.
And then later in the interview, Don Martins talks about how we've put the economic pincers on Venezuela's economy and how we've got to cut them off from international financial transactions, saying this all like this is in sort of boasting about this, and this is all a good thing. This is taking place in the context of almost no opposition within the official political realm.
Magic word. I got to ask you quickly about that. The NDP, one would assume they're called Social Democrats, is that they would manage to say something, but they did. But they ended up arguing with them. So as far as I know, they're wrestling under the table at the moment. But they have nothing to say on this subject.
Well, I did an article about a year ago that Huffington Post referred to it or titled as "The NDP's Trying to Topple Venezuela's Government," and so this has been the policy of Hélène Lavalliere. It predates Hélène to Paul Deuer, who was the previous foreign affairs critic. They have been all in on this opposition. Hélène Lavalliere has been all in working. So the wife of Leopold Lopez, who a number of reports have said he's the main, he's the head of the Voluntad Popular political party in Venezuela, the extreme right. That's the party of Juan Guaido. He's considered Wall Street Journal, Guardian, a number of have reported on him being the main Venezuelan mastermind on this recent initiative, and so his wife, he's been in jail, now he's under house arrest for his role in the violent 2014 Gurumba protest where 40 plus people were killed. He was convicted for his role in inciting violence. And so his wife has been traveling internationally on his behalf to build this. And she met with Thomas Mulcair back in 2017. She met with, did a press conference with Hélène Lavadière back then. A couple weeks after that, Hélène Lavadière, in a parliamentary committee meeting, referred to the Venezuelan vice president as a drug lord who has had billions of dollars of his assets taken. I mean, just things that are like, these are things that are like from the extreme right wing fringe. They're totally nonsensical, kind of over the top claims against the Venezuelan government. And so she's consistent. She was actually back in 2013. She was criticizing Harper from the right, saying that Harper, after the Maduro election in 2013, that he wasn't being hard enough on Maduro. And this has been a consistent. Now, what's happened in the past 2 weeks is this issue has boiled over into actually most NDP members and paying attention to it. And all of a sudden, they're saying, a lot of you, most of the activists are just like, this is outrageous. This is clearly a coup. This is an American-backed coup. We're backing Donald Trump. But the issue is that the party, you know, a small select of the party leadership has gone so far down the path of this regime change effort over the past 5 years that now you have this sort of division breaks out in the open. And Jagmeet Singh is caught in the middle. People saw that Hélène Lavadière recognizes Juan Guaido as the president, and Jagmeet Singh refuses to do that in this quite aggressive interview in Burnaby a few days ago. So, but basically, the NDP has applauded what's going on. Now their official position is recognizing Juan Guaido, but this is part of a 5-year campaign to demonize the Maduro government. I just wrote this on Facebook. There's a master's or PhD thesis sitting there to be done on the NDP's role in trying to overthrow the elected government of Venezuela. And hopefully, activists within the party are going to be able to, right the ship over the next couple of weeks. It's a scandalous example.
Maybe they ought to emulate the French against these parties that think they own us. Eve, it's great talking to you. It's a lot of information. We hope to talk to you again soon.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Okay, okay. Eve Engler. And this is the Taylor Report. We're going to listen to a little bit of the Staple Singers, and then we're going to talk to Otis Richmond.